to Bench Tested. It is a Ghostbusters podcast where we break down the props, the builds, and the people keeping the franchise alive at the workbench. And I got somebody on today who's not just a fan, but a builder. He's a seller. He's someone actively contributing to the community. Matt Baker has been deep in Ghostbusters world, building everything from Bell Gizmos to full proton packs. And now diving into PKE meters, he's also part of the Greenstream Ghostbusters, which is an online group that is keeping the spirit of the franchise alive in a really unique way. We're going to get into how he started, what pushed him from fan to builder, and what it actually takes to make and sell props, and what advice he has to anybody looking to jump in. Matt, welcome to the show, my man.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So we were just doing a little bit of chit-chatting right before we got into the podcast, and you were telling me that you kind of have a unique story. So I want you to take me back to the very beginning. What is your first real memory, first, of Ghostbusters? What hooked you to this franchise?
I would have to say, if I only had the picture to show, I was back in the 90s, actually, when I was a kid. And I remember seeing the cartoon, actually. It was my first experience to it. And I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And then I got to see the movie, and I am what I am now.
There it is. The rest is history.
The rest is history.
I love that. Yeah, I think it was the cartoon for me, too, because when the movie came out, obviously I wasn't born in the first one, but second one, too young to even remember. But I do remember, in the mid-90s at least, that I remember watching the movies. I was definitely a big fan myself of the cartoon, so I get that. I think the cartoon is kind of where a lot of, at least us millennials, kind of found the enjoyment for Ghostbusters. So at what point did you go from just enjoying the movies and the cartoon to actually being a part of the fandom?
Well, honestly, I've only been truly a part of this, like, to this extent for about a year now. Basically what happened was it all came from a panic. Uh-oh. My father was diagnosed with prostate cancer, and I know it's I knew it's an easy one to have. You can live with it your whole life and not die from it, but I don't know, just hearing, oh crap, my father has cancer, it just scared the crap out of me. And I thought to myself, well, what is it that my father loves? And I realized between him and I, we love to build stuff together my entire life. Never was necessarily any Ghostbuster stuff. I mean, all the projects we would do together was just out of this world. So I was thinking to myself, well, you know, we both love the Ghostbusters, and you know what? We love to build. So I was like, maybe he would like to, you know, I wasn't sure if he was going to be able to build per se, but I want to get him a proton pack. And then I figured we could, you know, mess around together and, you know, mess with it a little bit. I wasn't so ambitious to be a true builder yet at that point. I'm not going to use names, but a certain company, prop building company, took... I forgot what it came out to, just under $10,000 in U.S. dollars that he took from me for a pack. He knew my story. He knew why I was doing it. It was for my father. He charged me for all sorts of wild things. And it wound up that the reason why I couldn't pay on his website was because it was closed for a reason. He had me paying him on PayPal. And now I was down a ton of money. I didn't have anything to show for it. Didn't have a proton pack for my dad. So it hit me. I was like, you know what? Let me see what I can do. So the very first thing that I built are actually a pair of Ecto goggles. It wasn't anything too crazy. It was, you know, GB fan frames and lenses. And I got a Jupiter Electronics electronics kit. I had a little fun with it. I modified it to my own, with my own method. So there's an on-off switch, there's a charge port, a rechargeable battery. And I was like, I can do this. And I decided to kind of jump from that directly into building a proton pack, which a lot of people seem to know about because it's all aluminum. But that's where it just took off from there. So, I mean, I've been technically building for just under a year now. I started doing belt gizmos a couple months ago. My father taught me how to solder. And anytime my father comes to help me out, I always love posting pictures of him. So if anyone's seen any of the pictures of him in it, that's obviously him.
That's awesome.
that's where it all began.
It's a story of love, of hard work, and to see somebody come from that, it's so fascinating and it's so inspiring. And I think that's where a lot of people who are behind the workbench and want to get into building props, especially for Ghostbusters and stuff like that, I think that's where a lot of that love comes from, is that there was something in their childhood that kind of pushed them to get to this point and to be the fans that they are today. So, you know, and that leads me into what I want to ask you now, you know, talking about prop building and what it is that you do now, and you've been doing it for a year. Was there a specific prop or moment that made you think, I want to build that? That is my end goal.
Honestly, since I was a kid, I'm not going to lie, even throughout the years, I really wanted a proton pack. I couldn't stand not having one. And then, funny enough, I was talking about how I got one for my dad. I actually had just purchased one for myself not too long prior. And that's what got me on this whole, I wanted one for my dad. But yeah, that was the big go for me. So being able to build one myself, it just feels real good. Especially, you know, I bring it out to, you know, some expos and some cons, see people's reactions. Nothing feels better. I can't admit it. You know, I can't lie.
That's amazing. That's so cool. So you mentioned the aluminum proton pack. So you build, is it all aluminum?
Completely aluminum. So I actually won it on eBay accidentally with awesome gentleman that became friends with over time, which is fantastic. I love this community, always making friends. So I actually saw it on Facebook initially. Someone posted it on one of the groups I'm in. I was like, oh, that's crazy. I was like, that's unheard of. I need this. So I went on eBay. I'm like, all right, no one's bid on it yet. You know what? I'm gonna put down a $200 bid on this thing. And of course, my fat fingers, I screwed up and hit $2,000. I won, obviously. So at that point, I was in too deep. I was like, shit, I was gonna put this thing aside and like get into it. But I was like, no, now that I have this thing, all right, let's go. Let's see what I can do. And then it was cool. I had to teach myself how to do a lot of things that I didn't know how to do yet, which is what I find to be one of the most spectacular parts of building, is the things you haven't done before. Hence why you won't see me stick on one project for too long. Like, I'll build them for other people, but I've always got something new. And I mean, I have quite a few fun ones that I have cooking up right now.
Man, that's so cool. So what is the final weight of that proton pack?
The amount of people that asked, and I just didn't ever want to bother doing it, but I finally did. It's, if my scale is correct, it's around 40 pounds.
Maybe, oh my God.
Maybe like 42.
That is crazy.
Yeah, you won't. I only really wore it for a while once. So my first time taking it out was actually to New York City Comic Con. And I was meeting Sigourney Weaver, which was quite the spectacle. It was awesome. But unfortunately, she's very popular and her line was backed up. So I spent, and I'm not exaggerating, 5.5 hours standing in line with a 40-pound proton pack strapped to my back.
Oh my God.
By the time I met her, I was shaking. I was white as a ghost and I barely got a word out between being excited and exhausted. So, you know, most recently I actually went out to Awesome Con. I traveled out to DC.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. The Chesapeake Ghostbusters invited me out and the Virginia Ghostbusters were there too. It's awesome to make new friends. I was glad they invited me out and I got to show off my proton pack. But this time on a stand.
Yeah.
Out on my back. What was cool about this show is that I actually got to meet Adam Savage and, had him sign my pack. Because I'm definitely I'm a little fangirl for him. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
So that would be technically the third place I ever went to. But my very first one was actually the real New York Ghostbusters invited me out to be a part of them. And my very first experience being with any other Ghostbusters was actually at an expo in Garden City at the Cradle of Aviation. It was actually the tabletop gaming expo.
Okay.
And it was a good feeling. I mean, that was my first time being out not alone as a solo Ghostbuster. And obviously, you've heard the story of how I, you know, why I came up with the Green Stream Ghostbusters. Well, it wasn't until a little while after that, I guess I got enough out there. They saw me and they were like, oh, wow, he's local. And we hit it off, which is fantastic. So I just wanted to make sure I gave a shout out to them because they really made me feel welcome. And that's what I want to do is share that with the world.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, man. Now, for some of those folks out there who may not know about the Green Stream Ghostbusters, maybe not know the backstory, give us a little bit of that.
So, once again, I'll never use names. I'll never, you know, who knows what was going on in that person's, you know, mind that day. But there's been a couple of different groups that I kind of, you know, reached out to. Some that I saw in person. I'm not going to say where. But when I remember walking by them kind of talking to me, and as I kind of was like, oh, cool, hey, what's going on? You know, and I really got excited. And as soon as they went to go walk away, they just started making fun of me to a point where, like, they knew I could hear them. A lot of people don't, you know, are very, I guess, strict on their rules about how to be a Ghostbuster. And I think that is a bunch of bull. I think everyone should be able to let their own, to express themselves in how they become a Ghostbuster. So I do have some pretty screen accurate stuff, but, you know, it's some of these groups, they can be very clingy, and it was very hurtful, especially someone like me who, I mean, recently I came out and told the whole world about certain things that I deal with, and, you know, social anxiety being one massive one for me. And, I went to Ghostbusters Day this year for about 20 minutes, had a panic attack and left because I was, you know, and Comic-Con, same thing. I had a hard time being there. But now, you know, because I felt so alone, I was like, you know what, I can't be the only one who's like this, who's been, you know, kind of shunned off for some reason or another. And that's when I was like, you know what, that's it. I'm making my own group. I mean, I didn't think anything was going to come of it. I just didn't. But it did. I actually ended up reaching a decent amount of people, and still I have more people still coming in to join, because we're not here to take away anyone from an established group. You can be a part of an established group and be with us. We're just basically an anti-bullying campaign, in all honesty. That's really what it comes down to. And, like, I will 100% any of the guys that's in the group that are alone in their area, just because there's no one there. I'm kind of making it my mission. I'm going to be traveling around now, to where any expos or cons that any of these guys want to go to, I'll contact the local Ghostbusters to that area, the established ones, see if they would, you know, wouldn't mind if we helped out. Cause that's what we're here to do. We want to help everyone out. And then if that's, you know, and just say they don't want us to, then we'll go do our own thing. But I want to make sure everyone that's a part of the Green Stream has someone to be able to be with them so that they can go out, enjoy themselves, be themselves, you know?
That's something that I believe in 100%, and I wish, and I think a lot of other people do, and hopefully more of those people end up joining and being a part of this group, because I think that's amazing, because I'm in your shoes too, to a point. I mean, my social anxiety, I can only handle so much before I'm like, okay, I'm done. I got to check out. I need some me time at this point. You know what I mean?
I totally get it.
But with that being said, especially in this group, because it did originate, it looks like on Facebook, right, for the most part, where we get, you know, a lot of these folks coming into the group, there's a lot of builders in that too, and a lot of people who are building their props, because when I would post stuff, I got a lot of feedback. I've seen the stuff that you posted in there as well. So, I mean, that's something really cool. Was there anything that you saw that was super inspiring that other people are making that made you think, you know what, I can do that, but here's my spin?
I'd have to say it's a mix of almost everything I've seen people come up with. It's like everyone has these awesome ideas, like, especially in, actually, just to step back for a second, funny enough, the reason why there's so many builders in that group, I technically repurposed my old group. It was called the Long Island Ghostbusters Builders because I had no friends that build. And that was how I got some friends. So we had a good amount of people in there to begin with. But, I mean, seeing all those ideas, and I'll always ask if I could steal it. I'd be like, oh, dude, that's awesome. Do you mind if I do that? Is it cool? Like, right now, recently, I saw a proton pack that had all the tubes on the proton pack. They all glow. And I was like, what?
That's awesome.
I'm like, all right. So now I'm going to have to work that in. I mean, you know how badly I want to tell you about what I got cooking up for my next pack. Maybe I can tell you on the side because I can't know about it yet. But I've come up with some ridiculously wild ideas that, I mean, that's, I'm about building stuff that no one's ever seen before. Yes, I will do screen accurate if someone wants me to. Whatever your heart desires, my friend. But for me, it's got to be epic and wild and just unheard of.
So you've built belt gizmos, proton packs.
Yep.
Now you're kind of playing around with some PKE meters. Which one challenged you the most, and why did it do that?
All right. I'm going to have to admit, this PKE meter, I'm pretty sure, is going to be the ultimate build of the ultimate test of strength of a build. So I'm using the Pixel Props electronics for this PKE meter. And even the owner, Jason, who is absolutely awesome. He's awesome, man. I got to hang out with him at DC AwesomeCon. Great friend to have. But he even said to me, like, yeah, honestly, the success rate is real low. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, even I had a hard time putting it together. It was a pain in the butt. So I'm new to electronics, so I know it's going to be a real challenge. But I will say the other one that I already did that was my biggest challenge was the proton pack. I went ahead and went for the GP Star, you know, 2 Extreme, and I didn't know that was the hardest one to put together. I had no idea. And then, you know, I just got into it. Thank God I have a father who's an electrical engineer. He kind of walked me through some of it. But honestly, now that I got that under my belt, I feel like I can kind of take on the world. So I took on, and I do have fun. The harder it is, the more fun I have. I'll be honest with you. If it's not challenging, it is what it is. You know, it's still cool, but the harder it is, the more fun it is.
Yeah, so. For sure. Hey, well, I've actually got the GP Star kit myself, and I'm with you, man. It's not a piece of cake. I tell you that. It is not. But it is fun. And I think once you get into doing it and you see it, yeah, man, like you feel like you can take on the world.
Yeah. I mean, accomplishing, you know, finishing any build, you always, I mean, it's probably why I'm so addicted to it. The feeling of finishing.
Yeah.
It's like all of a sudden, it's like, holy crap, look what I did. And then you just want to share it with the world. And then you have, you know, these awesome groups online where everyone is so supportive. And then once again, being able to reach out to other builders and, you know, throw ideas off each other and problem solving. And it's just, it is a wonderful community. It really is.
So when you approach a new build, what's your process? Are you chasing screen accuracy, functionality, maybe a mix of both? What is it?
So I want it to have the true heart and feeling of the movie, but screen accuracy has never been my true thing. At first, I was a little bit into it because I didn't really know any better. Then I saw what some people were doing. So it's really authenticity. And so it's functionality, definitely. I want my props to do certain things that other people haven't even seen before. You know, I just, if it could do something really, really cool, that makes me so happy. And also it means I get to learn how to do that, make something do that cool thing. I'm always striving for something that I've never tried before, which is why I recommend everyone does. You never know what you can do until you've done it.
See, and that's the thing that I think a lot of people need to hear is that you don't have to stick with what you see in the movie, on screen. You can do your own thing, and that's okay. And I think a lot of people kind of get a little intimidated by that thought because there is this impression in the community that you have to do it to a T. And if you don't, you know, for example, it was something so minute on my pack that I posted a couple of years ago, but somebody said, oh, you twisted your cable the wrong way. How could you do that? Why did you not? I'm like, dude, the cable? If that's your only issue, then I think I made it. You know what I mean?
Honestly, you wouldn't believe the crap I was getting from my aluminum build when everyone saw the color I did it. That whole, you know, the shimmery, sparkly, like Twilight kind of speckled black paint.
Yeah. I thought that looked great.
I thought it was cool because no one had done it before. And then I did a lot of the green, the glow in the dark, and people were a little offended. Except I have to say I'm going to give a shout out to my wife. If she wasn't putting on that beautiful, shimmery, holographic top coat on her nails that night, it would have never came to my mind.
Wow. So you saw that and you were like, I got it. This is it.
Yep. I was like, I'm sold. That is it.
That is awesome, man. I love that. So let me ask you this. What are some of the mistakes that you made early in that, well, on the newer builds, right? That maybe some of these people who are coming into this for the first time and they could avoid it. What is something that they need to know up front?
Oh, take your time. Oh my God. The amount of times that I was just so excited about what I was doing. And I was like, oh my God, this is going so well. And I didn't just step back to breathe and make sure that I'm doing everything appropriately. Like, I make sure you measure twice, cut once. Honestly, if you're able to get doubles of things, because I still do that, because God knows I still mess up quite a bit. But yeah, it's got to take your time. That's really what it is.
Every time I go to 3D print something from my pack, I always 3D print at least four other copies of it, because I know I'm probably going to fuck this up. I don't know what I'm going to do. I got to fix this. I got to fix it somehow, and I don't want to wait for another print. Let me just print out some extras, and I'll be good to go.
Oh, that's exactly. Or at least I don't feel so bad that I do that. You know.
No.
I literally multiples of everything just because I'm like, I know there is going to be a screw up somewhere. Let's just prep for it and call it a day. Because honestly, getting some of these parts are pretty hard. I mean, it takes a long time. Some of the stuff's coming from overseas. You get stuff coming from the US, which is fine, which is much quicker to get to you. But also, this stuff isn't like in stock items. I mean, a lot of it is custom made. A lot of it is, you know, they only do like one run a year of something. So yeah, if it's available, I just want to stock up on it. And I'd rather just have it stored away for the next build I need to do than not have it when I need it.
Yeah, I think clippards are one of them that somebody I heard that there's maybe a shortage or at least it's tougher to get those at the moment. But yeah, you know, just some of those things that you just, it's probably not bad to have on hand. I have a buddy, Jace, who is a friend. He's a buster and he's got a spirit pack. And I was talking to him about upgrades, you know, maybe some stuff that he could do for it. So my question to that for you is, for someone who is listening right now who's never built anything before, but maybe they got a pack, spirit pack, for example, where it's a good start, do they realistically start without getting overwhelmed?
So that's a pretty good one, because I jumped way too far into it when I was trying to mod my HasLab trap. Start with the small projects, like, you know, change the knobs up a little bit to more screen accurate. You want to change some of the pack parts to aluminum. Awesome. I wouldn't recommend going deep into there and messing with electronics just yet. You know, slowly work your way into it, because the other thing, you know, I tell everyone all the time, you know, if you ever tried, you never know. But also, if you bite off more than you can chew, you may never come back.
Yeah.
So you gotta pace yourself. Keep it at the right pace, and then honestly, the sky's the limit.
So looking at where you started versus where you are now, what are you most proud of in your journey as a builder?
Well, if it were just going by builds, obviously, I'm going to say my Proton pack. That thing was what really, truly got me hooked. But the thing that I'm most proud of is the Green Stream Ghostbusters. I'm not going to lie. I mean, it's really touching. Some of the stories I've heard, people will reach out to me and, you know, tell me their story. And a lot of people also ask, am I legit? Is this really what, you know, you're all about? Because you never know. I mean, there's people out there that are scam artists. I mean, it's hard to trust people. It is.
Yeah.
It's to say this in this day and age, but that's what the situation is. And it's for the amount of people to come out and join up and just support each other. I mean, we have a little group chat going on, you know, and the thing is I love being in that group chat to see how much everyone cares about each other. You know, we're here to support each other 100%. And then, you know, that's just the whole mission, and it's just still growing. And it's like my love child right there, you know? I'm so proud to watch this group grow as it is.
And people might think that, you know, you didn't build that. That's not something you build. What about something physical you built? No, you built that, I believe. And I think that that's amazing that you did. I'm glad to be a part of it myself. So thank you for doing that. I want to say thank you for doing that. I think that's great. So let me ask you this. If you could give Matt one piece of blunt, honest advice to someone trying to get into Ghostbusters props today, what would it be?
Keep an eye on your wallet.
Don't go broke.
Honestly, that's probably one of the hardest things about being in this, genre is it's all custom stuff. I mean, nothing's cheap. And it's a very, very, it's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
Just got to keep an eye, make sure you're not overspending, because there's a lot of cool things out there. You got to start slow, start small, start, you know, somewhere with baby steps, and then work your way up. Do as I say, not as I do.
My man, where can people find Green Stream Ghostbusters? How can they be a part of it?
Oh, well, let's say we are mainly off of Facebook. That's where I started it. That's where I can put you into group chats. Just, you know, look up the Green Stream Ghostbusters. But we are also on Instagram now. And what I've been doing is I've been utilizing the Instagram to kind of post to both. Because, me being not so, equipped with these new social media things.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie, I don't use it that much, but found out I could do that. I was like, great. So I made an Instagram so people can follow from both platforms. And, honestly, it's easier to keep in for me to know who's coming in when you join from Facebook, because I have to actually accept you in. And this way I can give you a nice warm welcome. If you start following me on Instagram, I don't really notice, which I don't like. I want to make sure everyone feels special and they know that I see them, you know. And also, I'm waiting for a whole bunch of patches to arrive that are going to be my gift to everyone. They're just from me to you guys. I'm going to be sending them out as soon as they come in, and we'll go from there, because I feel like, you know, everyone needs to have, you know, their patch. Come on, it's the Ghostbusters community.
You got to add something else to your ensemble when you go out and you're trooping around your cosplay.
Exactly.
I love it. Matt Baker, man, thank you so much for being a part of the show today.
Absolutely. I really appreciate you bringing me on in.
That was Matt Baker. And I think what really stands out there is the progression from fan to builder, right? Starting with curiosity, learning through trial and error, and eventually getting to a place where you're not just building for yourself, but creating pieces that other people want to own and use. And that's really where this next part of the conversation goes. Because at some point, the hobby starts to shift. You go from building on your workbench to thinking about repeatability, precision, and how to take something that was once a one-off and turn it into something others can build on their own. And that brings me to my next guest, Mark with Scavenger Workshop. He's somebody who has taken that idea, right, and pushed it even further. If you've been following the prop community at all, you probably have seen his work, especially when it comes to the Ghost Trap build that he's currently doing. It's in a flat pack, and the level of detail and engineering that goes into them. We're going to get into his background, how he has approached prop building from a fabrication and production standpoint, and what it looks like to take something from a personal build and turn it into a full kit that others can replicate. Mark, welcome to Bench Tested.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Now, this is something that we've been talking about for a while, is the aluminum Ghostbusters trap. Dude, that's like the holy grail that people want in their arsenal of Ghostbusters props, right? I mean, that's something that I think ever since the movie came out in 1984 and moving on, that's been the go-to device. Everybody's got to have a trap. What made you want to get in to doing this in the first place, building aluminum props and that kind of thing?
So I started off about 9 years ago building R2-D2, you know, and I was like, yeah, the first part I made was the R2-D2's drive system, and I made it out of a flat pack, and then everybody just went crazy for it. It's like the number one used drive system for R2-D2, and then I started getting to the point where I wanted to learn myself on how to do CAD, so I just downloaded the free version of AutoCAD, and I started tinkering. After, you know, I'd say about a month, I was like confident that I could really build some stuff. I started my first CAD build was the octagon ports for R2-D2. And then someone said, hey, wouldn't it be cool to make an aluminum trap? And I'm like, I can do that. And then one weekend, just an entire Saturday, I just crammed it out, just sat there doing measurements and putting it in until I had something viable. I 3D printed it and put it together, posted it. And then this guy, Charlie, contacted me and he was like, hey, man, that's freaking amazing. Let's run with this. And here we are.
Dude, that's sick. I wonder who that guy is.
Yeah.
No, so that's one of the neat things about it is that you start in one thing, it leads into another. And what was the what? So R2, that was the first big prop that you've ever built, right? That's how you got started.
Wasn't the first big prop I built. I built a Ben of Kent proton pack and you know, some other Ghostbuster stuff. And I've done other things in the past, like a full aluminum Boba Fett and other stuff, all hand hammered aluminum and TIG welded stuff. So I've been dabbling in prop building for much longer than 9 years. I probably want to say about 20 or so years.
Now, before the profession that you're doing now, you had mentioned that you were part of engineering. Was that right?
About 20 years ago, 25 years ago, somewhere around that, I went to school and I became a CNC machinist.
Okay.
Certified CNC machinist. Did not do one day's of work as a CNC machinist. Just in school, just working on the three-axis lathes and whatnot and the mills in the school and my first day when I went to go become a CNC machinist, I was tinkering with the computer and I was like, man, computers are cool. Now, this was a long time ago before the computers are what they are today. And yeah. I was like, man, I want to work on computers. And then I changed course and became a system admin.
See, that's something you never really think about how it could go into something else. Now, I want to ask, what is it about or at what point really in your engineering background, did it start influencing how you approached prop building differently than maybe other hobbyists did?
Okay, so I've always had a knack for coming up with ideas and doing things. A long time ago, and you guys can look this up, I used to run a site called Acid Mods. Acid Mods was a site that what we did was we hacked gaming machines. We take a gaming console, handheld console, and rip it apart and rebuild it and completely turn it into something else. We were actually one of the first people to come up with the rapid fire controllers. This was very first Call of Duty, you know, on the very first Xbox. We designed that, and we were always in this battle back and forth with the developers of the game. They would try and stop us because basically what we would do is we was coding microcontrollers to send a pulse wave to the potentiometer on the trigger for the Xbox, which would make it seem like you were clicking the trigger unbelievably fast, right? And the next the next part that they did to stop us, they would say, okay, if this trigger is pressed so many times per second, then, you know, block it, just do nothing, because obviously they're cheating their. And then we rewrote our code to send a pulse to an unused button that the game wasn't using, then the trigger, unused button, trigger, boot, trigger, button, trigger, button, trigger. So that got through, and then they figured out what we did there, and they rewrote their game. It was just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. But it was fun, and it was exciting. Finally, it was all hardware level stuff, and there wasn't anything they could do.
That's awesome. So we can say that you were kind of like one of the first hackers for maybe Call of Duty?
Yeah, 100%.
That's awesome. So when you look...
All that could be looked at. I mean, if you Google cyber pirates, you know, C-Y-B-E-R-P-Y-R-O-T, you'll see articles on Engadget, on some of these other tech groups that...
tech spaces, yeah.
Tech places, and you'll see the articles on some of the crazy stuff we've done. And it wasn't always, we're a hacker, we're doing bad stuff, because we always said... We don't want, please do not use these things for multiplayer games. This is just for you guys to have fun. We've done other things. I've also developed a long time ago a controller that could be used by disabled people.
Oh, that's awesome.
I redesigned the entire controller so that way it could be used with voice recognition. This was all done on microcontrollers where you trained it with your voice and then. You know, it wasn't sophisticated software like you have these days, you know?
That's neat, though. I would have never thought that you would have had that kind of background. So I guess I can attribute you to all the hackers I have to face in Call of Duty these days. You were the inspiration. So let me ask you this. So when you look at a prop like the Ghost Trap, for example, what are you prioritizing first? Thinking in that engineering mindset that you have, screen accuracy, functionality, buildability, what is it?
Okay, so the first thing I want to do is screen accuracy. I want the prop to be as close to what you guys are seeing in reality is that's possible, you know? And then the second part of that would be, okay, now how do I build it, design around that so the way it maintains the accuracy, but then it's still able to go together and be functional? So there is a little bit of compromise there, but it's always on the screen accuracy side of things.
Yeah, I was going to say, because there's always the big debate in the community about hero accuracy versus practical builds, you know? So where do you personally draw that line?
So if at all possible, if I have the 100% the measurements from you know, proven measurements for the being 100% accuracy, I will make it 100% accurate, because there's so many different ways you can engineer something and still maintain that accuracy. So the compromise will always fall on the way it goes together versus the way the end product looks.
Yeah.
And you can see that whenever this stuff that I think about, I try and think about in a way to how it can be assembled. The third option that I always consider is people's skill set. I want it to be able to go together as easily as possible so anybody can put it together. And that's getting those three things is a juggling act.
Yeah, no, I can't imagine. When you had mentioned that you were doing this as a flat pack, that just kind of blew my mind, because I wouldn't have thought that would be possible, but it is, you know, and it's all about the engineering mindset that you have when you go into that. And when you think about that, tell me, what is the process when you're building these in your head that you're going through?
And here's the thing that will really blow you guys' mind, right? When you're thinking about this, you have to think about it in a two-dimensional and three-dimensional at the same time. You got to think about it because you're dealing with flat pieces. So you have to think of, imagine you trying to draw something on a notepad, you know, that's a three-dimensional object, and trying to break it down into its simplest parts and flattening it and drawing it. Then on top of that, think about how can I reassemble it and get it to hold together securely, so that way if I took it and I threw it up in the air 25 feet, when it hit the ground, it's still in one piece. So all of this is going through your mind when you're trying to actually design this thing. And for some reason, I've always been capable of figuring out ways to attach parts and then hiding, for the most part, hiding all of the little nuts and bolts and little things. Now, if there was something that you guys said, oh my God, this can't, you can't have this, you gotta change this, okay? I can see this little thing here, make it go away. I can absolutely make it go away, you know, but I need to hear that from the community itself. You know, I can readjust things. If you don't like the way something looks, like, okay, if this nut is visible on the bottom, you know, although it, when you shoot it with black paint, they pretty much disappear. You can't see it. It's got to pass the 1 foot test, right? Can you really see it at 1 foot away? But if it's something that says, okay, you know what, this is not something that we want to have visible, I can rearrange the design and make that go away. It's just a matter of needing that input from the community itself. I'm going to go with the simplest form of construction to pull the parts together, because that's basically what we're doing, is we're pulling all these plates together in on these different 90 degree angles, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's going to lead to when we do the removable cartridge, you guys are going to see some pretty interesting techniques. I'm so excited for that.
And that's something I, again, going to think about the trap as a whole. That's one that I thought would just be almost impossible to do without having it completely machined, or at least a big portion of the machined. But you have that mindset that you can kind of get behind that and think of it from that different point of view. And that's that engineering standpoint, right? Now, you built a scratch trap years ago, right?
Yeah. I built it out of aluminum years ago. It's not assembled the same way this one is assembled, because it was out of aluminum pieces that were basically cut in my garage with a combination of a angle grinder with a cutoff wheel and a hacksaw and other things. So it looks beautiful, but it's assembled in such a way where in the inside they're like angle brackets with holes drilled and holding it together like that, rather than our beautiful assembly we have on this one here.
Yeah. Because
there's only so much you can do in your garage with basic tools.
Right, yeah. I mean, I tried to think about it, you know, when you were first explaining this to me, and I just, there's no way that I could have done this without the flat pack. I mean, there is no way. I'm just saying. Like, I don't have the knowledge. I can get down on electronics, but when it comes to doing something like this and getting the metal pieces bent right and just doing out without any of that technical lead on it, I just get lost in that. And I'm sure a lot of other people would too. So if somebody's wanting to take this on, what's your first word of advice to them?
Well, the first thing you're going to want to do is, because when we're doing this, we have to make slight compromises, because the way these parts go together, there's what's called the kerf. And at each 90 degree angle, there's going to have a little curvature, and that curvature is because the water or the laser or whatever's cutting through it is round, right? So when it goes at a 90 degree angle, it's going to make a little curve. So when you're fitting pieces together, right, you're going to notice when you push the pieces together, there might be a slight gap. So what you need to do is you need to take a little file, one of those triangle files with a corner edge on it, and just go into the edge of each one of those tabs, and then dry fit it, and you'll see that little tiny little gap will go away, and I can make adjustments for that. But when I make adjustments for that, then the assembly gets a little bit looser, you know, and wobbly, and I would rather the assembly be a tight fit, and you guys just give it a little file. It doesn't take a little work, you know, too much work. But yeah, that's what I would suggest. Just take your time, dry fit it. And then when you're happy the way it looks, put it together permanently. And reach out to us, you know, me or you, and let us know if there's any things you would like to change. Because if there's something that can be changed for the good of everyone to make it easier, let us know. It doesn't take that much to edit the file and make adjustments here or there.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I want to talk about accessibility for a moment, because, you know, most aluminum traps, you know, we've seen go upwards of $1,600, $2,000, and they're out of reach for a lot of people in their pocketbook. What was your approach when bringing the cost down to this without sacrificing too much?
Okay, so the biggest thing is not having everything machined, right? Because when you start getting late time or mill time, you know, that price jumps up dramatically. So if we can keep everything as a flat pack, so that's why when you're doing the LED box at the back, that's why it's all these little plates that get put together and you slap a little of that metal adhesive in there. That's why we did that. I could have made it as one solid piece that gets machined, but then we have a $300 piece rather than a $5 piece, right? So to keep the cost down, I give the user, the end user, a little bit more work with glue instead of just having a bunch of pieces that just screw together and you're done. You have to use a little bit of adhesive when you're putting the doors together. You pop a little pin in there and you have a little adhesive in there and you clamp them together, wait 72 hours and it's done, right? And that's how we kept that margin so low.
Yeah, and a lot of people, again, it goes back to the engineering part of that mindset that you were in, that, you know, you just got to, you know, literally think outside the box. In this case, think outside the trap. And, you know, you're doing great with that, and that's awesome. Now, the shift away, and we were doing this at the very beginning, the way that people were able to come across these files was to donate to Patreon. When people did make that move, that money went to a charity. Now there's a move away from the Patreon. It's a pretty big move. What ultimately made you decide that model didn't align with what Scavenger as a whole was trying to do to begin with?
So a couple of things. So my wife, she works for St. Jude, and she talked to a representative there, and we found out for someone to donate to a charity, say St. Jude, for them to claim it on their 501c, it needs to be, I think, either $25,000 or $35,000 allotments. That makes it worth their while to use their 401c. In order for me to give it to the charity, I would have to have my own 401c, and then I wouldn't be taxed on it. I looked into getting a 401c because there is one for clubs, like, you know, Ghostbusters Club. They can get their own 401c. You can, but you have to have a treasurer. You have to have president. That's all in the documentation for registering in Texas as a 401c.
So, and a board.
Yeah, you have to have a board. And that's something I do not want to get into. So I figured right now, what has been donated by the you guys so far is under $1,000. They will not tax me for that if I take that out and I give it to charity. Anything above $1,000, they will. And then that will put me in a different tax bracket, and then I will have to pay higher taxes on my income just for me trying to do something good, right?
Yeah.
So right. I'm gonna put it into the public's hands. We're gonna open up the files, so they just have to click a link. And then it puts the parts in a cart already pre-configured with the bend degrees, the material thickness, all of the deburring and whatnot that needs to be done, settings, so that way you get the cheapest possible price. It's all going to be set up in the cart for you guys, so you don't have to bother with that. And that way, you know, and what we're asking you guys to do, if you still want to donate to the charity, to the charity, what I would recommend you do is, when you do get your kit, take your kit to one of your local schools and build it with the children. You know, this is all about engineering. This is engineering. You got servos that open doors, you have lights that flash, you have electronics, you're assembling a part. You know, spread that, you know, that STEM knowledge to the kids, and that we've done something. We've done what we wanted to do. That's all that we wanted to do, was trying to do something good.
Yeah, and so that's what I was going to ask, is that, you know, you've tied this project and I guess some others too to these different children's charities and STEM programs. Where did that idea come from? Why is that important to you personally?
I've always wanted to do things, because there's been many situations in the past where they've helped me out. When I was younger, I've stayed at Star of Hope. You know, when I was homeless, I was basically on the streets, and I stayed at Star of Hope. I take my droid to the children's hospital. I try and give back as much as I can, and you know, and that's why it really crushed me, because I wanted to do something really positive with this, but your hands are tied when it comes to the government, you know.
Yeah.
They want their peace no matter what, you know.
Yeah.
Regardless, there's just no compassion there. So it is what it is. So we're still going to do things. I'm still going to work with children. You know, I'm just going to do it with my own time and my own finances.
Yeah.
Right now I am currently working on a little droid that for a high school here in Houston, where it kicks out these little pellets for mosquitoes. It's supposed to drive around the yard, and I'll show you guys pictures of that. So
I like that. So what has it been like working directly with these students and seeing them interact with the engineering and the design side of that?
It's really amazing. I love doing that. I love seeing their eyes light up when we show them the videos of the design process, the end result, and some of the cool things we've done. And their eyes light up when we drive R2-D2 across the stage, and his head's moving and all, and doors are opening, and he's making all the noises. It just it gives them inspiration of what's actually possible. It takes it from that fantasy world, oh, it's just a movie, you know, I just go and see a movie, to holy crap, this stuff might be real, you know?
That's incredible. Now, looking ahead, you mentioned things like an ion arm, a thrower, removable cartridge trap, which you're currently already in the process of working on. Which of those excites you the most right now?
I'm kind of excited for the removable trap cartridge, because I don't have one of those. I have a thrower, I have the proton pack, and I have all those other things. I'm really excited doing something fresh and new, so that's why I already started them. I've got like 3 or 4 plates already done, so it's moving. We're moving on it. It's not going to come quickly as an aluminum thing. You guys will see a lot of the 3D printed parts, and I'll probably throw the files out there for you guys to test 3D printed parts, but the aluminum parts are going to be months and months away, because every time I do this, I have to buy it several times for R&D, because nothing.
Yeah.
3D print is way different than aluminum. They act completely different. So you have to make these little micro adjustments here and there. And that usually takes 1 or 2 revs of the actual development process to get it right. So
last one right here for someone listening right now who's never built a prop, anything like that before, but is curious, what would you say to push them to just start?
You got to do it, man. It's an amazing experience. Even if you fail, you've still won. You've got something from it. You've learned something from it. Every failure is always a step towards success, right? Every time you mess something up, I know it's irritating, and it just right in there, your mind's cluttered and you're frustrated, but you gain enlightenment. Once that initial disappointment fades away, you're like, oh wait, I can do it this way. And that's the challenges I see every single day whenever I design something and it ultimately fails. You know, I pull something off the printer and I'll go, well, that didn't work. I it gives me insight on how to make it possible.
That's awesome, man. I'm so looking forward to seeing what Scavenger Workshop has on the roadmap for the next year or two down the line. I think what you're doing now with the cartridge and helping out the kids with the STEM programs and, of course, charity and sharing your personal experience has been amazing. Looking forward to seeing much more from that from you. Mark, Scavenger Workshop, my man, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
All right. Thank you for having me.
All right. That was Mark from Scavenger Workshop, and I think what you just heard across both of these interviews really sums up what this show's about. You've got Matt on one side, starting from scratch, figuring it out, building at the bench, making mistakes, getting better, and then you've got Mark, who's taken that same passion and pushed it into precision builds, fabrication, and full kits that other people can actually get their hands on. That's the lane we're living in with bench testing. This isn't a fan podcast or just a fan podcast. This is about the builds, the process, the wins, the failures, and the people actually doing the work behind the props. And this was a bit of a special episode, special one at that. Consider this the inaugural episode. 2 guests, 2 different perspectives, both part of the same ecosystem. Now moving forward, we're tightening it up, one guest per episode, going deeper each time. We're going to be breaking down everything from the Spirit Halloween pack, the 3D printed Q pack, the fun.com proton pack, the HasLab, the upcoming 84 pack, and everything in between. What's worth it, what's not, what you should mod, what you should leave alone, and how to actually make this stuff your own. And yeah, we're also going to be talking more about the Aluminum Ghost Trap project. Just to be clear, that's a scavenger workshop build that was Mark's call on how he wanted to handle it and handle the files and distribution. We're not affiliated with or representing Ghostbusters or any other license holders. This is all fan-driven, community-based work. And the goal is to make these builds more accessible with respecting the people putting in the time to design them. At the end of the day, this show exists for the people who look at a prop and think, I want to understand how that works, and I want to build it. If that's you, you are in the right place. Appreciate you being here for the first one. We're just getting started. Right here on Binge Tested, a Ghostbusters podcast.